Did you know that people analytics can be creepy? I suppose I knew that, but how? And how are we going to manage that? That's what we're talking about today. And here we are on the HR Hub podcast with me, Andrea Adams. Keep listening to learn about this and anything related to HR. You can also find me on YouTube. Today, my guest is again, Dr. Salvatore Folletta. Dr. Folletta, or Sal, as I'm going to call him, teaches at Drexel University. He has just finished a book called Creepy Analytics About Evidence-Based HR and Ethical People Analytics. It's likely by the time this is published on my channel, his book will be published. He's also worked as a CHRO and a consultant. Hi, Sal. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Andrea.
Well, thank you for coming back and talking about this. I did another ethics episode recently about AI, and I thought it was just so fascinating, and it should really, really concern us all. Let's get your take on this. Why should we be talking about ethics in HR and ethics and people analytics in particular?
Yeah. When you consider all the ongoing transformational technological trends we're seeing now out there in the workplace, a big promise and potential for HR analytics, or what is often referred to as people, talent, human capital, or workforce analytics. And we're real excited about it. There's a lot of buzz out there. Over the last decade, we've seen a number of very well thought out books that got published, all kinds of resources and tools and conferences on the topic of people analytics. And today we have a robust global people analytics community. Mm-hmm. However, despite all these great resources and the good intentions of the HR analytics community, in my view, I've seen this gradual erosion of workplace privacy and ethics, what I would refer to as this workforce datification or quantified employee agenda that's running amok. And I think that undermines the potential benefits of HR analytics. And while many in the HR analytics community have good friends and colleagues that will argue that big data doesn't mean big brother, boy, there have been a number of workplace technologies, including AI-powered platforms and practices and stories that have made front page news. I should add, it means different things to different people. For some, it's just descriptive reporting of HR indicators, right? Others, yeah. It involves sophisticated modeling procedures. What's curiously missing, though, is any mention of HR, evidence-based HR, or ethics from any of the definitions that you see out there. So what I'm advocating for here is an evidence-based and ethical approach to developing our HR analytics capabilities that fosters or cultivates an ethical mindset. And we need to consider that throughout our HR analytics journey.
So what does it look like when the data is being used unethically? Can you paint a picture for us?
Yeah. When you think about ethics is not the same thing as legal, right? Ethics is all about the gray area, right? And just because something's legal doesn't necessarily mean it's ethical. And just because we can do something doesn't necessarily mean we should. So we all know ethics is philosophical. It's about moral principles and values, right and wrong.
Yes, yes.
And it really depends on our personal professional values, right? And ethics means different things to different people, right? To a business leader, it's all about, they have legal and regulatory obligations and fiduciary responsibility to do what's right for shareholders and increasing profits. So that's the ethical imperative for them. Whereas academics like myself tend to talk about it from a moral philosophy perspective. But when you talk about ethics and what's ethics, ethical or unethical, it really depends. It really depends on the specific practice that you plan to employ. And it's not just about the ethical use. It's ethics in terms of the questions we pose. And I'll mention this a little later, but the questions we pose, the data gathering approaches we use, the methods and sources we use, how we communicate it, there's ethics involved in that, and as well as how we use the resultant insights from people analytics.
Okay. So can you give us an example of when it starts getting unethical and when we have just crossed over into being creepy?
Yeah.
According to the title of your book.
Yeah, the creepy analytics title, I don't want to misinform anybody. It was meant to kind of get people's attention. The real purpose of the book that I wrote is how to do it ethically and responsibly. So to answer your question, there's been kind of a shift over the last two decades. When we did HR analytics, back then we called it HR analysis, HR measurement, HR research. People analytics didn't come into the vernacular until around maybe 2006, 2007. And there's been a big shift from traditional data collection, like employee surveys, metrics, personnel selection tools, like personality assessments. These were active data gathering that was fully transparent to employees. And there's been a move towards unstructured, novel data sources. Those are in vogue today, but novel data sources lack transparency. Let me give you a perfect example. For years, we were doing traditional web-based employee satisfaction or employee engagement surveys, and the employee knew what they were getting. They were getting a survey, and they completed it. Today, we're using AI-powered employee listening and sensing platforms that use passive data gathering, which is largely invisible to the employee. Well, that's a little creepy. It's like your manager can come to you and say, hey, Bill or Jill, you're disengaged. Am I? How do you know that? Oh, well, our always-on listening platform detected your employee sentiment, and it indicates or suggests that you might be disengaged. I don't know about you, but I find that a little creepy. And then you think about people analytics years ago was done largely by hand, manually. So since the data is bigger now, they're creating all these platforms to scrape and analyze and sense employee sentiment and behavior in the workplace in real time without the employee even knowing it. So that's where it gets a little creepy. And you can't blame leaders, really, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Leaders are always seeking out new and emerging digital HR technologies. They want to streamline and accelerate their HR analytical insights, their hiring processes.
Can I jump in here? Because having, I used to do quite a bit of surveying, was responsible for it. And response rates, people will want to respond. So you have to get creative about how you're going to learn about what they want.
Yeah, that's a good argument for the passive data gathering with employee surveys is employees are busy.
Yes.
We don't always get the response rate we want. They're so busy, why encumber them with a survey when we can just get it in a passive way?
Yeah.
And that assumes that if you're doing it in a passive way, that's okay, but you should be transparent. In other words, you should let employees know, hey, we're passively gathering data on your employee sentiment through various tools and platforms. Mm-hmm. And this is why we're doing it, and this is how we're going to use it. It gets creepy in particular when they don't know about it. And then the creepy factor has come into play over the last decade when you consider the digital HR industry. More and more AI-powered platforms are, you know, coming into the marketplace, and they keep pushing the envelope, you know, in terms of the so-called creepy line.
Yes, yeah.
So in my opinion, I think the HR community is at an ethical crossroad, and the choices we make will determine whether we have a bright future, it's going to remain a positive force for good, or a dark dystopian future. And I'm hoping for a bright future, and I think we can have that if we do it ethically and responsibly.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like the way you say that, a dark dystopian future. I mean, it's almost like the decision of all of society, really, and the HR goes with the flow, or we talk about ethics, we maintain our ethics, and try and do the right thing.
I don't think we'll ever have a completely dark and dystopian Orwellian kind of society. I hope not.
Yeah.
But so think of those as polar opposites. On one hand, on this side, we have HR analytics is a proactive, systematic process for ethically gathering, analyzing data for smarter workforce decisions. That's an evidence-based and ethical approach. On the other end of the extreme would be the quantified employee agenda. That's where HR analytics is all about ubiquitous datafication, surveillance, an analysis of the workforce that it's all designed to shape and nudge desired behavior, right? Yeah. And to manipulate and control the workplace. Now, that's a dark dystopian extreme. So we got two extremes. What I think will really happen is most organizations will assess the risk and rewards with certain creepy practices, and they will get right up to the creepy line. That's the ethical gray, shades of gray, if you will, the creepy line. I don't think they'll go totally extreme, dark, you know, Orwellian, but I don't think they're going to do it in a completely transparent way either.
Creepy analytics could be financially beneficial. Manipulating your employees can be beneficial.
It is.
What stops and seeing is, you know, you talked about their responsibility to the shareholder and whatnot. What is going to stop those organizations from pushing the line too far?
At the end of the day, the HR analytics community, we have to police ourselves. I think we have to come together and be proactive and come up with a set of ethical outcomes across our people analytics journey. We have to do that internally, for one. We have to have a data governance structure and ethics charter in place, but also be very transparent, right? Let employees know what we're doing and why, right? But at the end of the day, I think there'll still be some organizations and bad actors that will push the envelope and cross the line. And I think at the, you know, bottom line, we're going to need country-specific legislation, I think, to sort it out at the end of the day.
Now, we don't at this point in time probably have the laws, or do we?
We have some laws that are emerging. Some have just been proposed. So, for example, we've had GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation, that's been in place in the European Union for quite some time. That has implications for companies in Canada and the U.S. that operate overseas, right, in Europe.
Right.
Yeah. We also have the recently proposed AI Act, the California Consumer Privacy Act that was passed a few years ago, the recently proposed legislation in the U.S. Senate called the Stop Spying Bosses Act. I'm not kidding. And then, of course, there's been a lot of talk and investigations by EEOC, Equal Opportunity, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, and the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, and privacy groups are pushing this around AI-powered platforms, specifically automated decision systems that are involved in selection, like video interviewing tools that look at, they analyze your how articulate you are, your micro-expression analysis. Those could be kind of creepy, and the science behind them are not always good. You know, it's a lot of snake oil out there.
Yeah.
It is promising, the science, but there's a long way to go before they can make these big claims.
Can you give us some specific examples of creepy analytics?
There's a variety of categories we should consider when we think about creepy analytics. One is the datification of frivolous factors. So in other words, it's popular now for companies to use customized or bespoke surveys that will ask people seemingly irrelevant questions about their personal life and their preferences. So in other words, what are your pet preferences? Where was your hometown? Where were you raised? What magazines do you subscribe to that have a little bearing, you know, or a little relevance to their job or job performance, but they're asking it for specific reason. They're called proxy measures or proxy variables. They know, for example, that people from a small hometown are more likely to stay with the company than if you were born and raised in a major city. Now think about it. Right. They also know that, for example, that dog lovers are more likely to stay with the company than cat people.
You're kidding.
No. So big data analytics.
Like, stop. Time. Is that true?
Yes. The New York Times story. It was online, New York Times. So if you think about it, what they're doing is measuring your personality through proxy. A proxy measure. It's an indirect measure of getting at your personality so that you can't game the test. You have no way of knowing. You don't know if they want to hear dog person or cat person or what magazine might be correlated with some sort of desired outcome. And my question to you, is it appropriate to base a workforce decision on such frivolous factors and nonsense?
But you've just told me it's not nonsense.
Well, no, it isn't nonsense. But in other words, the variable itself, the proxy is nonsense, but is it fair to use it? So in other words, legally, they can't stop a company because it's not a protected group. In other words, unless cat people from big cities become a protected group, there's no recourse. You can't stop a company from doing it. Here's the question I'm going to ask you. Can't you distinguish between a great candidate and an average candidate by their resume through the interview process? Do you really have to rely on frivolous factors and variables and proxy measures?
But it's also alarming because to enable discrimination based on a whole bunch of other factors, it might undermine the spirit of the legislation so many of our countries have around don't discriminate for age, race, this, and the other thing, that it does not mean just that you're allowed to add to that list because it isn't articulated in.
Well, right. Just because it doesn't fit the letter of the law or the five or six protected groups. Legally, it is.
Legally, but you're missing the spirit of the whole thing if you go that direction.
Sure. So your mom's friend, what is it? Was it your mom or your, no, your friend. Your friend
it was somebody about. I interviewed about AI ethics. Whose mom, I don't know if it was.
Really okay, so that person that maybe came from a small town that had a cat and they had Botox may not get hired. But Andros is equal. You know, they have a fabulous resume, great skills and competencies.
It's crazy, but it's apparently the data's out there. The ability is out there. This isn't. Sounds crazy, but maybe it isn't that crazy.
So on one hand, the AI proponents will say AI will mitigate bias. In other words, you can't use charm in an interview and it levels the playing field. Okay, that's assuming the data you use to train the AI is valid, reliable, and didn't have bias built into it. Okay, it assumes that. You really have no way of knowing what factors and variables you're looking at. Maybe that's fair. Maybe it's not fair. I mean, you could argue that. Is that fair? So if you're a person of color or you have a mixed race, you're a mixed race or a person of color, on one hand, AI, the promise of AI is to mitigate or ameliorate that bias, to give that person, put them on a level playing field when they're interviewing for a job. But it could inadvertently be weeding them out too if the data to begin with was biased.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that's where the rub is, and that's why EEOC is investigating these selection tools, these automated decision systems that I was mentioning earlier.
I like that idea of automated decision tools.
Yes.
When it's making decisions, you have to be careful.
And they have to be able to crack open the box.
Yes.
No black box AI. HR deserves explainable AI. So that was one example. There's all kinds of workplace surveillance tools that are kind of creepy. There's even companies, get this, that are monitoring non-executive employees for stock dumping as an indicator of disloyalty.
Oh, of disloyalty or of organization success?
Well, it can go either way, I suppose, but you think about it. So in other words, if you're dumping your stock, that tells your employer that you're probably going to look for another job or you're leaving. Now, C-level execs, there is all kinds of laws that require the company to divulge. In other words, they have to make it public that they're selling shares of stock. The company's going to know.
Right.
But if you're a non-executive employee in the U.S., that's your personal financial decision. That's a little creepy. That's no different than moving money around in a 401k. Another area is sociometric badges that show where your whereabouts are. So in other words, wherever you are on the campus at work, they know where you are. And some of these badges are pretty sophisticated. They listen to you, what you say, what you do, your behavior, your interactions, who you interact with, etc. That's a little creepy too.
They can't listen to you when you're in the bathroom, can they?
Well, I asked that question. It's actually in my book. I was on a consulting project. I go in, I said, hey, I'm looking for, Jim Johnson. I'm just using a pseudonym. And he's my client. They said, oh, he's in room 9, a building 9, room 6. So I jokingly asked, could you tell if he's in the bathroom and what stall he's in? And she didn't think that was very funny. She didn't share my sense of humor, but I thought it was funny. but it begs the question. Yeah, I guess your employer would know if you're in the bathroom, maybe not what you're saying, but there are sociometric badges that can record you. The simple ones just know where you're located at. They use an RFID, radio frequency ID. Most of those just track where you are, but it also can tell them who you're interacting with through proximity. So if you had a meeting with someone else that has a badge, they know you had a lunch meeting with your colleague, right? But there are more sophisticated badges that can actually listen in to your discussions, your sentiment, et cetera. I kid you not. And some firms are also doing email analysis on your tone of your writing. So if you're writing something in email, they can look at your sentiment and analyze it, your engagement, whether you use sarcasm.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so think twice about sending that flaming email to your colleagues or your boss.
The venting email to your coworker.
That's right. They can analyze it particularly with Microsoft 365 and the Google Suite. They can easily, even if you delete something, they have it in the cloud and they can analyze it. That's scary.
That's creepy.
Yep. That's in my book.
Creepy. Is there any laws?
There's no laws that prevent many of these things. These are more ethical. These range from to questionable, right, or ethical shades of gray to downright creepy. The extent to which they do ultimately depends on individuals' professional and personal ethics and the organization's values and ethics. So it's going to take us to police it, because these are ethical issues, until country legislation catches up. And as I mentioned earlier, we're seeing some movement in terms of AI and automated decision-making systems, mm-hmm. but some of these other creepy, quote unquote creepy practices, they could be done. And there's nothing an employee can do. They ultimately, though, employees can make a choice on whether or not they want to work there.
Where can someone learn more?
There are a number of good resources out there. I mentioned Al Adamson's People Analytics Future of Work website, and he has a podcast, People Data for Good, and they routinely talk about ethics in the context of HR and people analytics. Jonathan Fuhrer and David Green wrote a great book called Excellence in People Analytics, How to Use Workforce Data to Create Business Value. That's a great book, and they mention ethics several times in the book, throughout the book. If you want a book just on the ethical implications of people analytics, then my forthcoming book, obviously Creepy Analytics, that'll be out in February of this year, would be the best place to go, because it covers the entire gamut. And I also outline the HR analytics cycle. I provide a cycle, a 7-step process that includes 7 specific ethical outcomes, including managing ethical stakeholder expectations, ensuring that you pose ethical questions and hypotheses for people analytics, that you use ethical sources, you use ethical methods, you do ethical analysis and interpretation, that you provide ethical insights and storytelling in terms of your communication, and more importantly, ethical use in making ethical decisions. So I cover all 7 of those in the book.
Right.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. You could do a whole episode on that alone. Well, thanks, Sal. I'm thinking about ethics and how we really do need to be considering this. However, we've reached the end of this episode. Thanks for listening out there. We'll catch you next time when I talk with another insightful guest.